We all know that feeling, right? Air travel is supposed to connect us, get us places. But let's be honest, stepping onto a plane can sometimes feel, well, stressful, like you're entering this sealed tube of potential tension.
It's a strange paradox, isn't it? Designed for connection, yet it can become this pressure cooker.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today, these in-flight psychological episodes. You hear about air rage, but it's broader than that, covering all sorts of mental well-being challenges that can pop up at 30,000 feet.
Right. Our goal here is really to unpack what's going on. What are the mechanisms behind these incidents? Why does this happen?
Yeah, we've gathered quite a bit to help us figure it out. We're drawing on medical journals, aviation safety reports, you know, research from academics, mental health experts.
Plus insights from the aviation safety agencies themselves. So a pretty rounded view.
Definitely. So if you've ever felt your heart race during turbulence, or maybe seen some behavior on a flight that made you uncomfortable, this deep dive should shed some light. Okay, let's get started. What are the main things that cause or trigger these kinds of episodes on a flight?
Well, it's rarely just one thing. It's usually a mix, sort of an intersection of the plane's environment, our own internal psychology, social factors, how we're feeling physically, and sometimes, yeah, substances.
Let's start with the plane itself, the environment.
Okay. The physical space is a big one.
It really is. I mean, it's cramped.
Yeah.
And that stat from MDLinks is quite striking. Only about 20% of people in the U.S. actually fit comfortably in standard seats.
Right. That lack of personal space, feeling confined, it can really feed into claustrophobia, general anxiety. It's almost primal, that discomfort.
Yeah, you feel sort of trapped.
Precisely. And then you add the cabin pressure and altitude. The air is thinner, less oxygen hypoxia, it's called. Even mild hypoxia can make people more irritable, maybe impair their judgment slightly.
So you're not quite thinking straight, maybe.
Potentially. Your brain's just running on a bit less fuel, you could say. Plus, you've got the constant drone of the engines, the vibration, that adds this low-level stress. It messes with sleep, too.
And the temperature swings. Sometimes freezing, sometimes boiling.
That definitely doesn't help. Adds to the general discomfort and irritability.
It's like a sensory overload in a metal tube.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the environment. What about our own minds? Psychological factors.
Fear of flying, aerophobia. That's a major one. Research in aerospace medicine and human performance highlights this. For someone with that fear, normal things like turbulence, they can feel catastrophic.
Like their internal alarm system is just dialed way up.
Exactly. It triggers a real panic response. And another key psychological angle is that feeling of powerlessness.
Oh, right. You're not in control.
Yeah. Molly Swillam, she's a therapist with Relief Mental Health. She points out that giving up control, trusting strangers with your safety in this confined space, for some people, that can actually tap into past trauma responses.
That makes a lot of sense. You really are surrendering autonomy. And I guess if someone already has a mental health condition,
that can definitely amplify things. Current psychiatry notes that people dealing with anxiety, depression, even more severe conditions, they're at a higher risk. The stress of travel can make symptoms flare up.
Christopher Hansen, an LPC, put it pretty bluntly, didn't he? Saying the pressure can cause them to act out.
Yes, it can push underlying issues to the surface. Now, moving beyond the individual, we also need to look at the social situation on the plane.
Like how we interact with each other.
And how the plane itself structures those interactions. That research by DeSales and Norton is fascinating. They talk about the plane cabin being like a social microcosm of class-based society.
Because you can see the difference between first class and economy so clearly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And their findings suggest that this visible inequality, seeing the different levels of comfort and service, might actually contribute to air rage. It brews resentment, maybe.
Wow. So the perception of unfairness could be a trigger, not just being physically uncomfortable.
It seems plausible. It makes you wonder. And it's not just about class. Group dynamics matter, too.
You mentioned some Australian studies.
Yeah, they found that certain groups traveling together, like sports teams, maybe big bachelor or bachelorette parties, sometimes show more problematic behavior, maybe a bit of mob mentality or feeling anonymous.
Or maybe just the purpose of the trip itself. You noted a link to party destinations.
Right. There seems to be a higher rate of unruly behavior on flights heading to places known for nightlife or big events. Perhaps people are already in a mindset to let loose, lower inhibitions before they even land.
Okay, so we're potentially cramped, maybe anxious, possibly feeling some social friction, and heading somewhere to party. What else adds to this volatile mix? physiological stuff.
Absolutely. Don't underestimate jet lag, messing with your body clock, your circadian rhythms. It's not just about being tired.
What else does it do?
Mind Your Anger talks about memory problems, insomnia, even mood swings or disorders. Your whole system is out of whack.
And the dry air on planes. Dehydration is a real thing.
It is. And it's not just thirst. Low humidity affects your mood, your thinking, and basic sleep deprivation. The Travel and Tropical Medicine Manual flags that as a direct trigger for unruly behavior.
So being tired and dehydrated lowers your defenses against stress.
Pretty much. Your resilience is just down. And that brings us to, well, substance use.
Alcohol mainly.
Alcohol is a huge factor. The link with air rage is really strong, highlighted in the psychiatric bulletin. And Dr. Hansen's point about self-medicating rings true.
People trying to calm their nerves, but it backfires.
Exactly. Alcohol hits differently at altitude. Its effects can be unpredictable, often amplified.
And it's not just alcohol, right? Mixing things.
Right. Mixing alcohol with sleep aids or anti-anxiety meds, that's risky. The altitude adds another layer of unpredictability. And for smokers on long flights, nicotine withdrawal is real. It definitely adds to irritability, anxiety.
It really does sound like a perfect storm brewing in that cabin. So with all these factors swirling around, what do these episodes actually look like? How do they manifest?
It's a whole spectrum, really. You get anxiety responses, maybe full-blown panic attacks, you know, heart racing, can't breathe, feeling unreal, or hyperventilation, constant worry.
Fixating on normal plane noises, thinking they mean danger.
Yes, misinterpreting normal sensations. That heightened state where every bump feels like the end of the world. Then you move towards more outward behaviors.
Like aggression.
Yeah. Verbal stuff first, shouting, swearing, threats. But it can escalate to physical aggression, sadly. Towards crew, towards other passengers.
And just refusing to cooperate.
That too. Non-compliance with safety rules, ignoring the flight attendants. That's obviously dangerous for everyone.
And then there are the rarer but more severe cases. Psychotic symptoms.
Yes. That MD Lynx case you mentioned, the passenger thinking someone wasn't real, that's a hallucination. It shows how reality can distort for some individuals under these conditions.
Scary stuff.
You can also see paranoia, intense, unfounded suspicion leading to confrontations. And sometimes just disorganized thinking and behavior, which is really unsettling for everyone around.
It paints a worrying picture. So how common is this? Are these just, you know, odd incidents? Or is it a growing problem?
The data suggests it's unfortunately becoming more frequent. Current psychiatry estimates mental health crises make up about 3% of all in-flight medical emergencies. That's not insignificant.
And IATA, the airline association, they've seen a rise.
They've documented an upward trend in disruptive passenger incidents generally since about 2007.
And those European numbers were pretty stark, weren't they? AACE's report.
Yeah, a 33% jump in air rage reports between 2017 and 2018 alone. That's significant. And their stat about safety being compromised every 3 hours on an EU flight due to misconduct.
That's sobering.
It really is. And averaging one emergency landing a month in Europe just because of air rage, that shows the severity.
And it didn't stop with the pandemic either. The FAA saw a spike here in the U.S., right? Linked to masks.
They did. It seems any extra stressor layered onto the flying experience can push things over the edge for some.
Which brings us back to alcohol, that Hong Kong study.
Right. Finding that alcohol was involved in about half of air rage incidents on Western airlines, it just keeps coming up as a major contributing factor.
Okay, so when things do go wrong mid-flight, what happens? What can the crew actually do?
The flight crew are the first line of defense. They're trained in de-escalation, trying to talk people down, reason with them.
Try to calm the situation.
Exactly. If possible, they might move the person, maybe find them a quieter seat. But if safety is really at risk,
then they have to take stronger measures.
Yes. Restraints might be used, sometimes with help from passengers or air marshals, if present. And the ultimate step, if things can't be controlled, is the captain deciding to divert the flight, land somewhere early.
What about medical help on board?
Planes have medical kits, potentially with sedatives, but they can only be given under guidance from a medical professional on the ground or if a doctor happens to be on board.
So they can radio for advice?
Yes. Most airlines have ground medical support they consult. They get real-time advice on managing medical issues, including psychological ones.
And after landing, what happens to the passenger who caused the disruption?
There can be serious legal fallout. Under the Tokyo Convention from 1963, the law of the country where the plane is registered applies. So charges can be filed there.
And the airline itself can act?
Oh, yes. Airlines can ban passengers. Some, like KLM and Transavia, even share blacklists, banning disruptive individuals from flying with either of them.
They're definitely taking it seriously. Okay, so that's management. What about prevention? Can we stop these things before they start?
Prevention is key. For airlines, it starts with crew training. Like Molly Swillam suggested, mental health first aid training could help crew spot early signs and intervene better.
Makes sense. What else?
Maybe better monitoring during boarding, looking for obvious intoxication or distress. Responsible alcohol policies are crucial, both in the airport and onboard.
And just communicating better.
Yeah.
About delays and things.
Absolutely. Keeping passengers informed reduces frustration. And longer term, maybe even thinking about cabin design like that research suggested, reducing the stark visual differences between classes might subtly help.
That's a really multi-pronged approach for the airlines.
Yeah.
What about healthcare providers? What can they tell patients, especially anxious flyers?
They have a big role in prep. Dr. Sultan recommends teaching relaxation or mindfulness techniques people can use in flight. CBT therapy can be really effective for fear of flying.
And practical planning.
Yeah, helping patients make a safety plan, who can they call if they feel overwhelmed. And simple stuff, like Dr. Sultan also mentioned, encouraging people to get to the airport early to reduce that pre-flight rush and stress.
Good advice. And for us, the passengers, what can we do individually?
A lot comes down to self-care and preparation. Get enough rest beforehand. Don't overdo the alcohol before or during the flight. Give yourself plenty of time.
And if you take medication,
talk to your doctor. Understand how it might affect you during air travel, especially if combined with altitude or alcohol. During the flight, use coping strategies, relaxation, distraction, mindfulness.
And if someone else is causing trouble,
don't engage directly. The Travel and Tropical Medicine Manual strongly advises against confrontation. Get a flight attendant. Let the crew handle it.
Okay, solid advice. Now, one last thing, social media. It feels like we see videos of these incidents all the time now.
It's changed the game, hasn't it? An incident that used to be contained to one flight can now go viral instantly.
And Dr. Sultan raised some, well, quite concerning points about that. This idea of a contagion effect.
Yeah, the worry that seeing these videos online might somehow normalize the behavior or even unintentionally encourage it in others, it's a disturbing thought.
And the ethics of filming someone in distress.
Huge ethical concerns there. It's often a serious privacy violation, filming someone during what could be a mental health crisis and sharing it without consent.
Puts the responsibility on us as bystanders with phones, doesn't it? Dr. Sultan also mentioned the potential harm to the person filmed.
Right. The potential for those videos to worsen their well-being, cause shame, isolation, potentially even increase suicidal thoughts in extreme cases. It shows how online actions have real-world consequences.
It's not just contained to the plane anymore.
No, it highlights that difficult balance between documenting things and the potential for causing real harm through sharing vulnerable moments so widely.
Well, this has been incredibly insightful. It's so clear these in-flight episodes aren't just random anger issues. It's this complex web, isn't it? Environment, psychology, social stuff, physiology, substances, all interacting.
Exactly. And really digging into these multiple causes is the first step, you know, towards making air travel safer, more comfortable for everyone. It's not just about managing incidents, but tackling the root causes.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, here's something for you, the listener, to think about. With these incidents seemingly more common, or at least more visible, what's the responsibility here? For us as passengers, for the airlines, even for the social media platforms where these videos spread, how do we collectively shape a better future for in-flight well-being and safety?
It's a big question. Touches on personal behavior, industry practices, and those evolving digital ethics. Definitely food for thought.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the often turbulent intersection of air travel and mental health. We hope it's given you some valuable perspective.